Today, it's May 21st, 2014.
I'm here for you, man.
Yeah. This is episode number 255, the Apple Context Machine. And Apple died 2 days ago.
Why, Apple? Why could you just release the iWatch when Chowdhury said you had to?
Why, Apple? Why did you have to die like this? Why? Why?
It's so terrible. It's so terrible. I'm Brian Chaffin. And this memorial service for Apple is
too silly.
Hold me.
Yeah, Monday. Remember old Trip Chowdhury?
I do. Yeah, good old Trip with his eye clairvoyant device.
Yeah. Yeah, he said 62 days ago now that Apple had 60 days to release the iWatch died. Just they got plenty of money, but if they didn't release the iPhone or the iWatch within 60 days, they would become an irrelevant company. It will become a zombie if they don't come up with an iWatch.
Apple 60 days. Zombie company.
Yeah. And that 60 days was up on Monday. And our own Kelly Gaumont was Johnny on the spot and noted the day and the fact that Apple was apparently dead because Trip Chowdhury said so.
There you go. Hence our despair, our yes. Wailing, our gnashing of teeth.
Our wailing and gnashing. Boy, I wish I'd remembered to gnash my teeth a little bit.
We can add that in post.
Yeah, right. Then people will think I'm clever.
Exactly.
I can trick them. I could trick them. So, you know, fun at Trip's expense because he is really a terrible, terrible analyst when it comes to Apple. I don't know what his track record is with any other company, but the man's track record with Apple is awful.
Less than exemplary.
It's awful. It's just plain awful.
Well, it may be exactly spot on if his objective is to be wrong.
That's very generous of you.
I'm guessing this is all he has. So I was trying to make him feel a little better about having such a bad, dismal.
He seems to make a living at this, and that he. I mean, I know why he gets quoted. He gets quoted by the mainstream press. He gets interviewed by CNBC because he's offering a contrarian view. He's offering something that not many people are willing to say, which is that, you know, Apple is doomed or dying or, you know, I mean, he dismissed the iPhone. I think it was the 3G, that it was no way it was going to be. Or the 3GS, I forget. I don't know which one it was, but
The one that failed miserably. Oh, wait.
Exactly. And this time around, he actually had this very specific proclamation, this very specific prediction. If Apple didn't release the iWatch within 60 days, they would disappear.
Now,
that's a quote. Or they will disappear. It's specific.
That's what he said. Yeah. Now, to his credit, he made a pretty ballsy statement. He totally owned a statement there.
Absolutely. And, you know, which is, you know, any good prognosticator knows to never be specific. You know, Nostradamus was brilliant because you can make whatever you want to make out of his quatrains. And people do. And but he
maybe Trip should have started writing in quatrains.
he maybe should have, and maybe should be less specific. Like, you know, I said at the time, and we have a broader picture here. We talked about this. I think we talked about this on the show. I said at the time that he could have said something like, and I'm quoting myself here, if Apple doesn't deliver the iWatch before Google Wear hits the market, and Google Wear is Google's...
Underpants?
Google Wear.
It's the underwear that's fun to wear. And it knows exactly what you're up to.
It was a wearable... Holy foreshadowing, Batman! Google Wear is Google's broader wearables initiative that they announced, and you know, whatever. We haven't actually heard much about it since then. But anyway, at the time I said that Tripp could have said, if Apple doesn't deliver the iWatch before Google's Wear hits the market, the company will likely enter a phase where it is considered a Me Too has-been. If that happens, Apple will take a revenue hit in subsequent quarters as its customer base flocks to Android. At that point, the only thing that could arrest Apple's slide would be its next chance at delivering another disruptive product. Okay, that is, quite frankly, a brilliant prediction. It's stupid, but it's brilliant at the same time. That's how you couch that kind of prediction.
Yeah, you give yourself a fallback, and what you crafted there is a modern-day version of the Quatrains.
It's true, and not only that, it offers some specific prescriptions for doom. Prescriptions. I don't know if I can use prescription that way, but it offers some.
Sure you can. This is our show.
Oh, that's right. Darn tootin'. So it offers some specifics about what might happen, but it also acknowledges that Apple has so much money that there's always going to be another chance for Apple to reinvent itself should the company undergo some kind of trouble. That's the thing about it. That's what is so stupid about this comment from Trip Chowdhury is that it somehow Apple has this one shot, and then if it misses that shot, the company's just going to go away. That there are no second chances. You know, Apple has already shown us that you can have multiple second chances if you've got the right people with the right vision.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so, Apple has been the comeback kid more than once.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, anyway. So that was Tripp, and that was 2 months ago, and, you know, of course, 2 days ago, his 60 days was up, and
now we know.
Kelly's piece, by the way, is very funny. You should read Kelly's piece.
It is.
I know you did, Jeff.
I did.
But our readers should read. If our readers did not read Kelly's piece, they should, because it's very funny, and we have a link in the show notes.
Of course we do, because we're good like that.
That's how we
and
roll.
And now I think I know what the next killer game is going to be Plants versus
Apple Zombies.
Yeah, Apple Zombies.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So this kind of brings up we had another death knell this week.
Oh, man. Apple's dying left and right.
Left and right. So this would be death knell number 65. And really, I mean, you know, it's just an ignorant piece by a guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. He's probably a good reporter. He actually has some more newsy pieces that were slightly better written. And he just clearly doesn't know anything about Apple, and either decided that he did or was tasked with writing something about Apple. But it came from the Guardian Liberty Voice, which is in no way whatsoever affiliated with the Guardian newspaper out of London. And this just, you know, incredibly poorly worded and badly reasoned piece, John Benjamin argued that Apple's days of innovation are behind it, and that something about iTunes and maybe new leadership and Apple is rotting from the inside. Like, as we speak, Apple is rotting from the inside, and it's just days.
You know, the rotting from the inside, that's... generally speaking, that's an analogy that gets carted out for Apple.
Well, yeah, but it's because of the name Apple, and because that's what apples do.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just tend to point that out because, well,
not surprising.
Yeah,
and you know, it's. I mean, there's nothing of substance in this piece, and you know, picking to picking on this piece, I felt a little bit like a bully picking on this piece because it's just so badly written. But you know,
I prefer to think of it as tough love.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah,
might as well be me. I'm pretty good at it. But really, I think that the sort of broader question here, and the thing that we decided to talk about is why do we still have, you know, Apple's got what, $150 billion in the bank, $138 billion, something like that. And that counts, that's after paying out tens of billions of dollars to shareholders directly in the form of dividends, as well as buying back tens of billions of dollars in stock. Apple's got a ton of money. Apple's bringing in more than $10 billion per quarter. Why do we still get, despite all the success, predictions of Apple's doom? Why is the Apple death knell counter still relevant after all these years?
Muscle memory, right?
No, that's just it, though. Why?
Yeah, and actually, that is a really great question. We have this company that's clearly doing well. And I have a theory, which is that there are a lot of analysts and pundits out there that still aren't able to grasp the fact that Apple does things in a way that's different from other companies. And they equate that with a setup for failure because they're not doing what the other companies are doing. They're not doing what these people expect them to do. Therefore, Apple cannot succeed.
Apple clearly doesn't get it in their minds, because if they did get it, they would be doing the stuff like everybody else. And the fact that they don't do the stuff like everybody else is clearly a sign of some kind of either failure within the company's leadership or a shortfall within the, you know, some kind of fault of the leadership rather than the critical thinking abilities of the outside observer.
Right. And actually, we see this during the quarterly earnings conference calls that Apple does. It seems that there's always at least one analyst that will ask Apple, and I'm paraphrasing here, why aren't you running your business the same way all the other tech companies run their businesses?
Yeah. Tony Sakanagi, he pretty much every quarter will ask, why are, you know, do you have any plans for, he always couches it differently, but basically, what are your plans to go after market share with a cheap iPhone like everybody else?
You know,
it's always a variation of that, one variation or another on that theme.
Yeah. And and he always gets the same answer, which is, dude, that's not what we do.
Yeah. And, you know, Tony Sakanagi, very successful analyst. He gets his questions. He's allowed to ask his questions, and Apple is choosing which analysts get to ask their questions, by the way. That doesn't happen. It's not first come, first serve. It's not something that's like somehow set in stone. Those aren't the only analysts that are present, and those aren't the only analysts that are pushing the button to ask a question. Right? Apple is choosing whose question they will take.
Now, knowing that Tony's going to come out with the same question every single time, I have to assume that Apple is punking him. And what they're doing is they're building... No, wait with me here. They're building him up for one of the earnings reports where instead of answering and giving the same response, they're going to come back with, we can't work on that now because we're still building that Apple television thing and totally screw up just all of the whole rumor mill things that are out there and get everyone all fired up about a big screen Apple television.
Yeah, no.
No. No? Really?
That's not what they're doing there.
No, I know. That's not what they're doing.
They take his questions because he is an influential analyst, and there is despite I mean, he does a bunch of other companies. He covers a bunch of other companies apparently well. It's just, you know, Tony can't let go of the idea that the way to be successful in anything related to computers is to be Microsoft. He can't. I mean, that's his sort of mind frame. And
so clearly, he hasn't seen Microsoft's attempt at moving into the tablet space.
Well, apparently, yeah, apparently. Of course, you know, Microsoft does still make a ton of money as well. But it's, I mean, there are a couple of other analysts that seem to have that same sort of mindset that well, we know that market share is what matters, and you want to capture as much market share as you can. And so if you're not doing the things that will allow you to capture more market share, you're clearly not doing it right, and we want to know what you're going to do to fix this. I mean, that's the sort of mindset with some analysts. But that's not all the analysts. There are many analysts to cover. I'm saying this because, you know, I know a lot of our readers bag on all analysts. There are some analysts who absolutely understand what Apple's doing, and who are absolutely fans of the company, and who absolutely understand that Apple is thinking differently about its markets, and that is why they're successful. They're not successful despite doing it differently. They're successful because they do it. Yeah.
Yes. And I guess for some people, that's just a really difficult concept to wrap your head around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we had a point here. These death knells. Yeah. So this isn't just pundits that do this. This is you know, there are definitely analysts that are out there too. But it's weird. It's weird to see death knells still happening. I mean, it seems like I'm still adding what, you know, 3 or 4 a year.
Yeah.
For the last several years.
Yeah. Which is, I find that to be fascinating. But I guess for some people, the whole thing about, oh, Apple isn't doing what everyone else is doing, therefore they will fail.
Yeah, and there's also this meme that Apple somehow can no longer innovate without Steve Jobs. And of course, at the root of this is the fact that Steve Jobs was behind so much Apple's innovation, not necessarily because he came up with the ideas, but because he hammered on the people that did come up with the ideas until those ideas became even better, and then took credit for them. But that's beside the point.
Sure. And but
love you, Steve.
And I think that there is a lot of concern over the fact that Apple hasn't done a major product announcement yet this year, and people feel like Apple is losing their way, has lost their way, is no longer innovating because they aren't doing these market disrupting product launches every quarter.
Right, which
they've
Apple
never done.
Never done. No company could do.
Right.
At least, I guess a company could do that, but we haven't ever seen that company. That company is yet to reveal its existence to us. And you know, the thing about looking at Apple's track record and looking at the passing of Steve Jobs and looking at the new guy at the helm, you have to apply some critical thinking to put everything in context. And that critical thinking includes the fact that anything that Apple releases now, even the so-called iWatch, Steve Jobs had his fingers in that.
Of course.
So even releasing the iWatch is still not proof that Apple can innovate without him. It's only proof that Tim Cook can execute on the innovation that was started before his tenure. No, I'm not bagging on Tim Cook here. I'm just talking about realities in terms of how long and what it takes to actually innovate. The thing that's going to show whether or not Apple can really innovate without Steve Jobs is going to be the product that's after that. And maybe not even the product, not until the product after that one.
Yes. It's not like Apple creates products on a very short release cycle. mean, they plan years in advance, like many companies do. So things that are being released now and this year and even next year, these are things that have been in development for a very long time, which means that they were at some stage of development when Steve Jobs was alive and still involved with Apple.
Right. So you've got that. You've got the fact that it does take years. You've got the fact that Apple doesn't, you know, I think we've talked a little bit about this, but you look at Samsung's Galaxy Gear smartwatch, and it's a, you know, this is a case of thinking way inside the box and releasing a version of a product that everyone understands, that everyone sees. Smartwatch, it's, you know, it talks to your smartphone. Maybe it does a couple of things, but, you know, really it's interfacing with your smartphone, and that's just sort of, you know, it's like the Pebble, although I think the Pebble is a better device than the Galaxy Gear by a long shot.
Oh, yes. I agree.
Apple is not going to release such a device. Apple is going to release something that is disruptive and probably takes them into a new market. You know, you look at the iPod, you look at iTunes, you look at iPhone, you look at iPad. Each one of these was a brand new market for Apple. It wasn't a brand new market that existed, but it was a brand new market for Apple.
Right. And they came in and they disrupted that market.
Right. So when Apple releases some kind of wearable technology that's probably going to be on the wrist, i.e. the iWatch, it's going to be doing something that we haven't thought of before, and it's going to be doing it in a way that we hadn't realized that we wanted something to do. And these are, again, this takes critical thinking, and it takes understanding that part of Apple's magic is not releasing a device until it's a product, until it's what it should be. I'm not saying that they always succeed at that, but that's definitely the goal. And if that takes an extra year or two, that's what it takes.
Right. And then when they release it, they release the right product.
Right. Punk ass companies like Samsung will rush something to market just to be first.
I love how you just called Samsung a punk ass company.
Well, they are.
Yeah. Okay, here's what I see as the true litmus test of Apple's success with a wearable wrist device.
Okay.
Will I wear it? And will you wear it in lieu of one of your other watches?
I know.
And if the two of us are like, hell yeah, put that on my arm, then Apple has totally nailed it. And for people that don't get why this is so significant, I don't wear watches.
And I wear a mechanical watch.
And you love your watches.
I am kind of a nut for mechanical watches. Kind of a nut for mechanical watches. And I've thought about this quite a bit. I know you have too. Of course, you're a fitness expert. Fitness technology expert. Mm-hmm. But all of the fitness gadgets that you've tested have all been things... Have you tested any that wrap around the wrist?
Yes. I have a couple sitting on my desk in front of me right now.
That's so telling.
Yes.
They're not on your wrist.
They're not on my wrist.
As a matter of fact, the only reason you have them is to test them. You would never have gotten them.
No, I would not have gone out and bought these as a primary fitness tracking device.
And then having been given them to you for testing, having them been...
It's okay. It's sing it, Brian. Just sing it.
Even after having received them for free in order to test them, you were not compelled to wear them on your own.
Right.
So far.
Yes. All the devices I have, these wrist top devices, they sit here on my desk. Unless I have a specific task that I want to use them for, which is typically I'm comparing features, I am comparing accuracy, and what I end up comparing all of these to, because you need to have a baseline to work from. Otherwise, it's just all nebulous figures.
Right.
So I chose the Fitbit One as my baseline. And it's a clip-on, not a wrist-top thing. And that's actually the device that I wear all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So these others, they sit around unless they're being used for some form of testing.
Yeah, so you are one end of the spectrum. You don't wear a watch. You don't wear even, you know, like a quartz or a digital watch. You don't even wear fitness devices on your wrist, even though you are, first of all, very fit, and second of all, an expert in fitness technology. And yet, so you're one end of the spectrum. I'm in the sort of, I don't know, I don't know if I'm the other end of the
you
spectrum.
You are not the other end of the spectrum. You are not.
I wear something on my wrist, but it's to a certain extent an affectation. It's a love of the mechanics of the watch that really makes me want to wear this thing. And
okay, in that sense, yeah, I'd say you are the other end of the spectrum.
So, at least another. Maybe if we have six axes.
Seven axes. And a maniacal devotion to the Pope.
Exactly. Can Apple appeal to us? And I don't know. Until Apple actually releases this, I don't know. But I do know that Apple expects to disrupt something.
They certainly do. And I'm keeping an open mind, even though I'm like, wrist, blah, 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 blah. But I have to remind myself that when the iPhone came out and I fell in love with it and then Apple said, and now we're giving you a bigger screen with the iPhone 5. I was like, oh, ruined. And I've had an iPhone 5 and 5S, and I'm totally fine with the screen size. It's a little bit awkward for me, but I'm totally fine with it. Which I guess means I'm not totally fine with it. I'm just mostly fine with it. But then the other thing is the iPad mini. I was like, yeah. No, Apple's not going to do it. And then they did. And then I'm like, I can't imagine really wanting one. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, you're strangely reactionary in this regard.
I am. And then I end up getting one and I'm like, oh my God, best thing ever.
I know. That's why I say strangely reactionary, because you end up actually liking what Apple's going to do. But you have been, no, Apple's not, you've been rather adamant. Apple's not going to do that. What do I need it for?
And then the next thing you know, I've got it. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Guys, you got to get one.
Yeah, that's...
That's really pretty funny.
It's a quirk of Jeff Gamet.
Yeah. I like to think of it as an endearing trait.
Oh, yeah,
because it makes me feel better about myself.
Absolutely. It is absolutely an endearing trait. So, where are we here? What am I saying to you? We still have these death knells. It's weird. Part of it is a lack of understanding. Part of it is the Apple hating. I don't think John Benjamin is an Apple hater. This is the guy that wrote Death Knell 65. As a matter of fact, he professes to be a fan, and he professes to be a fan in a way that I think he probably is a fan. He just doesn't understand Apple. And apparently doesn't pay very close attention to the rumors, because he didn't even mention the iWatch. The iWatch that if Apple or when Apple releases it, is the direct refutation of his entire premise, which is that Apple can no longer innovate. So, I don't know. Again, lacking critical thinking skills. But it's just...
Did you just say
it's very
lacking
strange.
Cricket thinking skills?
Critical.
Oh, critical. Okay.
But maybe he lacks the cricket thinking skills too.
That's possible. Okay. Sorry. Please carry on.
It is weird. And I guess we don't really have an answer to this question. We don't really understand the mindset of people who... I mean, surely some people are click horse.
Of course.
Right? They're writing a hit piece on Apple because it's going to get traffic. That's certainly the case sometimes. And... sometimes it's just Apple haters, people who just hate everything about Apple. You know, they're just a fashion company, or they don't, you know, they don't innovate, which is weird. They don't do anything original; they just copy everybody else, which is just weird. But you know, those people exist in droves. Some people want to see the big guy fall, and Apple has clearly become the big guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's, you know, some, and for some people, it's just wanting to drag anything that's successful down in order to either elevate themselves or, to, you know, for them to feel good about themselves. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of different psychologies that are contributing to this phenomenon. But in the year 2014, I do not understand why I still get to write Apple death knell counter entries. I don't get it. It's weird.
I think you're going to be writing these for a long time. And the psychology behind them will evolve over time, and I think we're seeing that now. Because for a while it was, oh, Apple, they're losing market share, they're doomed. And now it's, oh, Apple doesn't do the same thing as everyone else, they're doomed. Or in the case of Trip Chowdhury, oh, Apple didn't hit my magic deadline. They are doomed.
Yeah, I wonder, by the way, how much of like this particular thing was like, I can get on CNBC if I say this, or how much you know, how much of it is that he just sort of like grabs a hold of an idea and say, because he clearly likes Apple products.
I'm assuming he does.
I've always gotten the impression that he does, that he's actually a fan of the result of their products. But, you know, is he just like sort of like he's getting a hold of an idea in his head where, you know, what's, you know, gosh, you know, Apple's got to do this. Man, oh, it's just so obvious. Why, you know, why can't Tim Cook see this? Man, Apple's just got to do this. And it just sort of gets in this feedback loop in his head. And that's why he ends up saying these things. It's hard to know.
Yeah.
As much of a jerk as I've been to him, I kind of doubt he's going to have coffee with me. But
well, if he does,
maybe
watch your coffee really close. Just saying.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we move on?
All right. Yeah. I can't wait to hear what your next death knell is.
Yeah, I can. But we'll see. It is fun to write them up, at least. Let's move on.
All right.
Let's move on. Let's make that really quick mention. We were both talking before the show about the iPhone remix by Metronome.
Holy crap, that's so awesome. And I want to point out that I didn't resist this one first. It was just immediately, holy crap, it's awesome.
That's absolutely true. So this is something Kelly found for us. This is the second thing that we're talking about that Kelly found for us. She posted the video as a cool stuff found, but a guy who goes by the handle Metronome, and that's G-N-O-M-E, Metronome, get it? It's a play on, anyway.
That's a very clever little play on words.
He's a musician and producer, and he took Apple iPhone ringtones and other sounds and sampled them. And combined that with, you know, some drum sounds and some keyboard riffs that he recorded, and then some live guitar at the end. And he took all this stuff and he mixed it together into a song.
And it's really cool. I think the song sounds good. And watching the video, that was so awesome. Just seeing how he crafted this song.
Live. Because, you know, I told you, if I had tried to create something like this, I can put loops together. I put the loops together for the theme song for our new morning podcast that you're running for us.
Yes.
Daily Observations.
Yep, TMO Daily Observations.
Yeah, I took some, we needed a theme song, I took some loops, I put them all together and into the thing that you hear. And, you know, to me, when I do that sort of thing, it's something I do in Logic, and it's a very visual process for me where I am, I'm hearing the way the loops go and I'm, you know, hearing what I want to, how I want to do them. But the actual mixing and arrangement and all that stuff to me is kind of a visual process. And so for me, it was just fascinating watching this guy take these loops, and he's using a very, very high end, pad to mix this stuff live, and you see him do it, and it's just terrific. I mean, what a talented guy,
amazingly talented. You people need to go check this out.
yeah, if you haven't, you know, we thought about playing it, and we thought about actually spending an entire segment, because Jeff and I had a really long conversation about how awesome it was, but we realized that what we were, yeah, exactly, but we realized that what we were talking about was the video. And we weren't even really talking about the fact that the coolness he made out of the iPhone sounds. It was watching him do this. So since this is an audio podcast and not a video podcast, we realized that we shouldn't do much more than point you to it, and now we've done even more than that. But we've got a link in the show notes. It's really cool. And it's amazing, and go check it out.
And now, to help drive that point home, we're going to have Ainsley and Sebulba do an interpretive dance. Boys, go.
Okay, let's let them... Well, that's very nice, guys. Let them do that. Let's let them think that somehow this is a video podcast. And we'll just let that go in the background and move on to our next topic.
Awesome.
Oh, very, very good, boys. Very good. That's good stuff. By the way, it's Sierra.
Oh, that's right. Ainsworth and Sienna.
Ainsley and Sierra.
Yeah, that's what I said.
We're gonna get you on board with this.
What's your problem?
Oh, fun stuff. Yes, keep going. That's good.
I didn't that's know good. They could bend like that.
Yeah, that's, exactly. Who knew?
Now, that's an interesting interpretation. But I digress.
I have another interesting interpretation that we can explore.
You know, our segues are painful.
They're so painful.
Brian,
bad.
Do tell.
There we go. Yeah, we'll edit out the painful stuff.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
No. We still have to talk about this. Oh. Another conversation that we started having when we were prepping the show is about Google.
Mm-hmm.
Because you... Tell us what you covered this
morning. Okay, so this morning, I covered the news that a filing that Google made with the SEC, so Securities and Exchange Commission, talks about how they're looking at all different kinds of platforms as ad delivery systems, meaning you buy a car that has Android-powered controls on the dashboard. You can see ads on your dash. You buy a new refrigerator that's internet-connected, and Android drives that interface. Well, that's now a Google thing, so they can place ads in there. Put them in Google Glass, their Google Wear products, whatever comes out of that. And they specifically mentioned thermostats, and they just so happened at the beginning of this year to have bought Nest, which is the smart learning thermostat. And at the time, the Nest people said, look, you know, the deal is that we're going to be part of Google. We're excited about that. But don't worry, the deal also includes a promise that your information that's collected by the Nest, because the thermostat does collect information so that they can improve the product. Whatever information is collected, it stays private. And if Google is looking at delivering ads to smart thermostats, then the implication is that they are going to deliver ads to their own Nest product, thereby breaking the promise that Nest made when they were purchased.
All right, so one way to interpret this is that Google is making it clear that it considers the idea of displaying ads anywhere it can on any Google-powered device fair game.
And I think that's definitely part of what they're doing with this statement in their SEC filing.
But there's another way to interpret it, though. And that other way to me is that Google is making it clear that it considers information from any Google-powered device to be fair game for ads.
And I think that the interpretation does not need to be binary.
Yeah, it probably doesn't. It's probably both. It is rather. It's a remarkable conceit to think that people will look at ads on the thermostat, and rather than rip them out of the wall and crush them into small pieces.
Yes.
And Google tends not to be stupid about things. So it's weird that Google would even consider, let alone actually execute, the idea of displaying ads on the Nest thermostat. Because no one's going to tolerate that.
Unless they've gone crazy.
Yeah, I guess.
But
I mean, it'd be one thing if Google made the Nest free.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that would be a completely different story. But expecting someone to pay $250 for a thermostat that displays ads when you want to change the temperature, that's going to piss off a lot of people.
Brr, it's cold. Buy the new coat from Burberry.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Don't forget to take an umbrella. And by the way, Jack Frost's umbrellas are fantastic. You can buy them here.
Yeah, see, I see stuff like that happening. All right, now, here's a point that came up this morning when I was recording TMO Daily Observations. I had Kelly and John Martellaro on today, and we did talk a little bit about this. And one of the ideas that came up was, well, what if Google were to do something like this where it wasn't quite so obtrusive, like, hey, we're just going to sit here and feed you ads all the time. But if it was in a context that was more appropriate, like a Nest thermostat telling you that it's time to change the filter in your furnace, and then saying, by the way, we found these three deals on thermostat or on...
You can't really click through to them. I guess you could. I guess they could send it to your smartphone.
Yeah, something like that. So it's tap
here to send to your smartphone.
Yeah. So it's ads that you're getting that aren't appearing directly on the thermostat, but are based on your thermostat data, and then delivered to you because they're
right.
More appropriate than hey, there's weather, so here's great hats.
Right. Okay. So the reality is we don't know specifically what Google meant. And the way Google has always operated and the way most large technology companies operate is that they're very vague. They're as vague as they can possibly be about whatever their actual intentions are, when they're, be it announcing something to the public, be it announcing a deal, be it filing something with the SEC or some other regulatory body. We don't really know what this means. It could be that we're going to see ads on every single Google device at some point. It could be that Google is making it clear that they're watching everything you do with every single Google Power device or app or whatever service. And we don't really know. But I know one thing. I don't want my world paid for with ads. I don't want corporate presence paying for every single little thing that I do.
I'm totally with you. I experienced that firsthand earlier today, and I was surprised at just how jarring it was to my overall experience. And this is actually with iTunes Radio. So I have a iTunes Match subscription, which means that when I play music on iTunes Radio, I don't hear commercials.
Right, because you're paying for it.
Because I'm paying for
it. You're paying for the service directly.
Yes. I was listening to iTunes Radio today through someone else's Apple TV, and they did not have iTunes Match. So ads were coming up on the television, and so there were visual and audio ads, so like static images and audio to go with them, every few songs, much like on traditional terrestrial radio.
Right.
And it was horribly jarring, and it almost felt offensive to me, because it was exactly what you just expressed. I don't want to have my life paid for through corporate sponsorships.
Right. Now, I say that, and I've long been a big proponent of not skipping ads on TV when you have something recorded, because it's the ads that pay for the product. But that's because I don't really have the option of watching live TV and not getting it without ads.
Sure.
Right. I know that you can, if you're willing to watch only a subset of shows that you can purchase off of iTunes, or even get as part of Netflix, or even, well, no, Hulu has ads everywhere, that you can in fact directly pay for all your TV. I happen to watch a lot of TV actually live, and I know that ads pay for that. And so this is kind of a contradiction within me. I'm also willing to accept radio ads, and I think it's because I grew up with radio ads. What I don't want is personally, and I'm working this out in my head live, folks. What I don't want is ads paying for my physical products. I don't want ads paying for my smartphone. I don't want ads paying for my computer. I don't want ads paying for my Chrome laptop. And I don't want all the data that a corporation gets about me from those devices and products and services, and then turns around and sells them to the highest bidder to be paying for it either.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do not want to pull my iPhone out of my pocket to answer a call and have to see an ad while I'm swiping to hear your voice.
Right, and that currently doesn't exist, but
these things are totally plausible.
It is, yeah. It's beyond plausible. It's both possible and sometimes feels inevitable. And you know, lots of folks are willing to pay. Let this stuff happen. Lots of folks don't care, and that's actually what we were theoretically going to talk about today, which was, you know, how do we we complain about Google, but I know that we both use some Google services.
Sure.
And so, you know, what does that really mean? It's kind of like Amazon. You know, I get really tense about some of Amazon's business practices, but there are things that I buy from Amazon.
Sure.
Happily.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a very complex thing. And like, I think one of the things I said to you pre-show was that I'm the only one that cares about being tracked. And I'm the only one who cares, you know, that privacy from corporations is something that most people don't care about, and that I was well outside the bell curve. And you know, is that the case for listeners? What do you think about this stuff?
Actually, that's a great question. I would love to know what our listeners think, because sometimes it feels like for things like this, we're living in an echo chamber, because neither of us are really that comfortable with the way our personal lives are being exploited to be a revenue generator for companies like Google.
Yeah.
But are we alone?
Yeah. Chromebook exists so that Google knows everything you do on your computer. Google Docs exists so that Google can know every spreadsheet that you make, every letter that you write, every, you know, to-do list that you put together. Gmail exists so that Google can read all of your emails, right? Chrome exists so that the Chrome browser for multiple platforms exists so that Google knows every website that you visit.
Yes, that's true.
Know, you can log in to other sites with Facebook or Google or even Twitter. So all of those companies, whichever company you're using, can know what you're doing everywhere else. Google allows third parties to display ads, which is either AdSense or AdWords, I forget which. Not only because it makes them money, but because then Google can also track you on all the other sites that aren't Google's properties. You know, we could go on and on and on here. Google's business model is to gather money.
Gather money. We just happen to be the product they sell, so that they can gather that money.
Yeah, it's the whole if you're not paying for the product, you are the product thing. And Google's business model is to gather information on us, slice it and dice it, and sell it to other people so that they make money off of us. Now, they're giving us services that are quote-unquote free. We're getting something from that. But I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live in that world. I would rather pay Apple a premium for a premium product so that Apple can make an enormous amount of money, and they're actually trying to protect my privacy.
Yeah,
rather than sell me to the privacy to the highest bidder.
And I clearly agree with you because I paid for iTunes Match. And it wasn't like it was a service that I desperately needed, but I thought, yeah, I really don't want to have the ads in iTunes Radio, and I knew that I was going to continue using iTunes Radio. Oh, and as a bonus, right, I get to do the music in the cloud sync thing.
Yeah, which is the one reason why I haven't paid for iTunes Match is because I don't want to do the music in the cloud things. I want to control the quality of my rips. Like I sent you a song today that was Apple lossless. I like my files to be Apple lossless files, and until Apple offers that, I don't want iTunes Match. I don't want my music in the cloud. I don't want Apple to run that. And that's the one reason why I haven't gotten iTunes Match for the free for the ad free radio stuff. It's because I haven't bothered to make sure that I can not have the syncing while still getting my iTunes Radio for free, ad free. Just FYI, and
that's okay. Weird thing. I mean, that's a totally legit reason to.
Well, it's just interesting to me because I'm sitting there saying that I want to directly pay for stuff, and yet I'm not directly paying for iTunes Radio when I can, and I do listen.
Well, this is one of your endearing traits, like me, poo-pooing a product and then turning around and saying, "Oh my God, you have to go buy it."
Fair enough. I think yours may be a tad bit more enduring, but I would very much like to hear from our listeners. What do you guys think about Apple? I think about Google. You hear me rant about this frequently. You hear us talking about it frequently. I certainly write about it all the time. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about this company and its practices? And not the Android versus iOS thing. I'm not wanting this to be a Google is the enemy because they dared rip off Steve Jobs' baby iOS, and so therefore they have become the bad guy. That's not what I'm asking about. That's actually not. I'm not particularly interested in that feedback about this discussion because it's a separate discussion. What do you think about Google and privacy today, and ads, and this involves Facebook, it involves Twitter to a lesser extent, it probably involves Yahoo, and will increasingly involve Yahoo. So what do you guys think? And you can write us at acm@macobserver.com, and you can comment on this the show notes for this the article that we put up for this particular podcast.
You can tweet I'm at us.
I'm TM O'Brien
and I'm Jay Gamet.
Yeah, I want to hear from you, whether you agree with me, you don't agree with me, you think I'm crazy, you think that I'm like the most brilliant person of all. I don't care what your thought
is. And I want to hear from you because you're cute.
That too. All right. Well, this kind of feels like a good place to end the show.
I think so. On a cute note.
On a cute note, yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. I'm Jay Gamet, both places. And wow, that sounds so very familiar.
Yeah, it seems like we just went over that. And I'm still TM O'Brien. I haven't changed that on Twitter. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. I'm at geektales.com in addition to the Mac Observer. And Jeff is at freshbrewedtales.com. That's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Sylvia, Ashley, you can stop dancing now. Ha ha.